أهل البيت عليهم الصلاة والسلام. These are the things that according to the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, Aqiq as the first mountain confess and confirmed all these things. That's why it is important to ring in our, on our right hand the Aqiq al-Ahmar, the red Aqiq. Thank you very much. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Rouhani in the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Oh, just a few days after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979, Palestinian leadership was welcomed to the country. They were handed the keys to what had been the Israeli embassy in Tehran during the previous regime. February 11, 1979 was the day the Islamic Revolution in Iran became victorious, and by February the 19th, the first Palestinian embassy in the world was opened in Tehran. Now, this was a message to the Zionist regime and its supporters that Iran would not ignore the suffering of the Palestinian people and would stand up against oppressors, big and small. This set the stage for what we are witnessing today, a whole revolutionary front standing up against the Zionist regime. Stay with me as I take a look at all of this on the Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Richard Medhurst, journalist and commentator out of Vienna. And Jamal Waikin, professor of international relations, Lebanese University out of Beirut.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome both of you to the program. Good to have you. Richard, what's your assessment of the move that Iran made 45 years ago as a newly revolutionary nation and taking this stance that it did regarding Palestine?
Thank you for having me on the program.
Thanks for coming.
And congratulations, of course, to all Iranians on this day for the anniversary of the revolution.
Thank you.
The step that Iran took that day has had reverberations and after effects and consequences for the entire region to this moment, that, you know, to this day. And it has benefited the region greatly because this war that we're seeing in Gaza, you know, it's a part of the Palestinian struggle which other countries have turned their backs on. And Iran has been really the truest and most steadfast supporter of the Palestinians. And this was actually one of the pillars, one of the core beliefs of that revolution. And I was smiling when you just brought up the fact that, they closed the Israeli embassy and handed the keys to the Palestinians. I remember this. This is so powerful. In terms of not just the real victory that it was for the Iranians and Palestinians, but the symbolic value of it as well. It's truly remarkable. I also remember that for example, when Bobby Sands died during his hunger strike, the Islamic Republic went and changed the street that the British embassy was placed on to Bobby Sands. Right. And then the British embassy had to change their letterhead. So you can see in so many different ways how Iran has supported anti-colonial, anti-imperialist struggles really around the entire world. And nowhere more importantly, of course, than in the region itself. And the fact that you see Syria, for example, or Yemen, or the Palestinians, or the Iraqis, or the Lebanese, getting support, whether it's political support or military support or moral support from the Islamic Republic. This not only provides people with an opportunity to liberate themselves, but it also it sends a message to the entire world.
Okay.
We should remember that Iran was controlled by the United States and the United Kingdom when they carried out a coup. And so that revolution in and of itself was a rejection of British and American imperialism in the region.
Okay, well, let me get Jamal in on this. What about that, Jamal? You heard what Richard said as far as this revolution being an anti-imperialist and made certain moves from the very beginning. I want to talk about the novelty of a newly revolutionary country and prioritizing another nation. I mean, one of the first things that Imam Khomeini, he talked a lot about the Palestinian cause, and as I said about this, the embassy that was open. We have to also understand the situation of the time of 1979. The United States was extremely powerful, not the United States of today. And the Israeli regime, as far as its support, we know what it has been. So your thoughts on that and the novelty, if you agree with me, of a newly revolutionary country taking on that task?
Well, I believe that what happened back then, first the victory of the Islamic Revolution was not a nationalist movement per se, calling for the takeover of power and the establishment of a new regime. It was a part of a wider, had a wider vision for the struggle in this world between, on one hand, imperialist powers that were trying to impose their hegemony on other powers, weak powers, weak countries, and weak people, and revolutionary countries that were trying to not only free themselves from this imperialism, but also to help other people free themselves from this American imperialism and Zionist imperialism. And we should take into consideration also the early connections between the Iranian revolutionaries who were, some of them were training, for example, in Lebanon, in the Palestinian camps back then, even before the victory of the revolution. All those elements and people who were activists against the regime of the Shah, who was supported by Israel and the United States, by the way, were seeking support and refuge, sometimes some of them in Lebanon, among the Lebanese people, and in their way they were trained in the Palestinian camps. That explains, for example, the integral relationship between the Islamic Revolution and the Palestinian cause. Not to forget about the religious dimension, for example, Al-Aqsa Mosque is regarded as a holy site, not only for Christians, but also for Muslims, and of course some holy sites for Jews, not Zionists in this sense. So that's why there was this awareness of this integral relationship between the Palestinian cause and the Iranian revolution on the national level, on the level of liberation as a liberation movement, and also on the religious level. And this explains why, since the beginning, the first step that was undertaken by the Islamic Revolution and by Imam Khomeini was to close down the Israeli embassy and turn it into the first Palestinian embassy in the world back then. And of course, Iran had to pay a heavy price for this choice, because it was dragged into a bloody war with Iraq back then. We know very well that Saddam Hussein was pushed and encouraged by the United States to wage war on Iran, and it was part of the US plan to contain Iran, what they call the dual containment, to let both countries, Iraq and Iran, drain off their resources and manpower in order to ensure the security of Israel. And of course, Iran was also subjected to heavy burdens, to a boycott, blockade, etc., for nearly five decades now. Despite all this, Iran kept on pursuing its cause in supporting the weak people, Mustadafin, as they it's said, or they as they are called by the Iranians. And until now, we see that the Iranian revolution is supporting the Palestinian resistance, the Lebanese resistance, the Yemeni resistance, and the Iraqi resistance, and against the American Israeli occupation and aggression.
Okay, stay with me, Jamal. Let me get Richard back in on this discussion. Richard, Islamic Iran has never hidden the fact that it supports Palestine's, and as Jamal has just said, the country has paid a price for standing up against the oppression of the hegemonic front, especially the Zionist regime. But despite that, in 45 years, the leadership, whether it was Imam Khomeini or Ayatollah Khamenei, has never gone off course with that support for the Palestinian cause. I'd like your thoughts, to hear your thoughts about that. Despite all the pressure, it has stayed the course.
Well, that shows you that you know, whether we are talking about Khomeini or Khamenei, both of them are men of principles. They have courage, and they stayed the course. You know, they stood up against imperialism no matter what, and they did it when other people would normally be scared. And we see most of the planet, they unfortunately, the leaders don't have the courage to stand up against the United States, against Zionism and Britain. So, you know, that is a huge credit to Iran's leaders after the revolution, and the leaders of the revolution. And the fact that they have tried so much to crush Iran and punish it, I mean, you know, people need to understand this, that when Iran was hijacked by America and Britain in 1953 until 1979, it was a puppet. And because Iran broke free of that, they have never forgiven Iran. And so that's why, to this day, I mean, you can see in the press, they're still, you know, making vicious cartoons about Iran in pop culture and movies. In addition to politics, of course, they're always saying bad things about Iran. This is very vicious. It's very vindictive, and it's because they have never gotten over the fact that Iran decided to liberate itself and help others liberate themselves. And the sanctions, of course, the sanctions regimes that have been imposed over and over again. We, you know, the nuclear deal is a great example of this. You had Iran sitting down at the table. Iran agreed. Iran followed. Iran fulfilled its obligations 100%. And all of this was attested to by the International Atomic Energy Agency. And what happened? The United States goes and rips up its own deal. So, you know, this shows that Iran has really done everything to be a peaceful country. Iran has never attacked another country or invaded another country. It only seeks diplomacy, and it only seeks to empower others. And even when, you know, you sit down with the United States and you try to hash things out, they just rip up agreements and walk away, because the nature of American leaders, unfortunately, is imperialism, and it is to attack those who resist. So, you know, it's no wonder that the axis of resistance is vilified. There's a reason that Yemen is bombed and Syria is bombed and Syria is sanctioned and Iran is also attacked. It's precisely because of this, because they have a common principle. They're steadfast. They remain true to their cause and to their course, and they refuse to accept the previous world order. And this has proven to be very fruitful, because right now we're seeing a multipolar world begin to flourish. And who is at the helm of that? Iran is one of the countries. So, you know, when we saw Iran acceding to BRICS, for example, this made me very happy. It made people who are observing international affairs very happy, because it's the hallmark of a new order that is coming, and one that is balanced and not hegemonic and based on just one country's rule.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Yes, indeed. Well, Jamal, over the years we've witnessed resistance leader after leader visiting Iran and visiting the leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei. How do you assess the relationship between the resistance factions and the leadership in Iran and its importance?
Well, first of all, we need to understand this relationship. It's a balanced relationship in the sense that these leaders of resistance groups, they are not dominated or they are not tools of Iran as they are portrayed sometimes by the West and Western media. But they are true partners and brothers in one cause, which is to resist the hegemony of the imperialists and to free their people from this hegemony. This is on one hand. On the other hand, there is also this sense of, let's say, gratitude to Iran, because Iran and the Islamic Revolution was the one to support these resistance groups in order to hold the cause of their people. So if we take, for example, the case of Lebanon, since 1982, for example, of course, there were other resistance groups before that. But afterwards, after the Israeli invasion of Lebanon, Hezbollah was able to become the most prominent.
Okay, we seem that we have lost Jamal. Let me just go back to you, Richard, in general. You know, both you and Jamal were talking about as far as how Iran, in general, especially in the media, has been demonized. An important part of this, one of the things that they use is actually trying to play the Persian-Arab card, the Sunni-Shia card, or so many other cards against Iran. I want to look at it from the media perspective and what they have continued trying to demonize Iran. But at the end of the day, action speaks louder than words. And what we can see right now as far as Iran and its steadfast support for the Palestinian cause and other causes in the region. Your thoughts on that side of things?
Well,
Oh, this is for Richard. Sorry, Jamal, because I had lost you. I'm very, very sorry. So I switch over to Richard. I'll come back to you. Let me have Richard answer this question.
I'll
go ahead,
very
Richard.
Brief. I'll be very brief so Jamal can go back on. You know, one thing that really disappoints me is how Western education also perpetuates this myth that, you know, the Middle East has to be viewed in terms of Sunni and Shia. This is colonial. This is colonial thinking because they want to divide and conquer. You know, the fact that Hamas is Sunni and Iran is predominantly Shia and they are working together dispels this myth entirely. And if only people would just, you know, think for a second instead of swallowing propaganda, they would know this and realize this very well. And you know, I think that's something that's to be celebrated and something that shows that this is not about religion or something like that. We shouldn't allow the West to play this card. This is about anti-colonial movements and national liberation and the liberation of this region from centuries of Western dominance.
Well, Jamal, what has happened over the decades, the Western hegemonic front has tried to isolate Iran in so many different ways. Your assessment of where Iran stands right now from that perspective, do you see it as being a nation that's isolated, or how do you see it?
Well, I believe that Iran was able to overcome all obstacles and blockades that the West tried to impose on it. First, it was able to reach out to the Arabs through supporting the major Arab cause, which is that of Palestine. And it was able to reach out to Sunnis, Shia, Christians, and other people who all believe in this Palestinian cause. In addition to that, it was able to withstand all pressures and to draw alliances, especially with Russia and China. And now we see that Iran has become an integral part of Shanghai Cooperation Organization and a member of BRICS, in addition to its strong alliance with Russia and China, especially in imposing the stability in Central Asia, which was a region that the United States tried to destabilize. Other than that, we see that China, Russia, and Iran are complementing each other in terms of withstanding the attempts of the United States to isolate them. Also, Iran was able to get in contact and reach out to faraway and distant countries such as Venezuela and Cuba in order to face and confront U.S. hegemony and build brotherly relationships with non-Muslim and, let's say, non-Arab and non-Asian and African countries such as Venezuela and Cuba. Other, in addition to Brazil, Bolivia, and other countries. So I don't see that Iran is isolated. I had the opportunity to visit Iran on two occasions, and I saw that much of the needs of the people were provided by the state and by the Iranian economy. So Iran was able to develop its weapons and its technology, its civil and its military technology to withstand the West. So all these were achievements by Iran.
Okay, stay with me. I just want to get Richard in 1 minute here before we go. Richard, 45th anniversary of Iran's revolution has been celebrated today in Iran. Do you think that it has been proven that this revolution was not just for Iranians, but for the oppressed around the world?
Yes, without question. And my guest just mentioned other countries also that are very far away, like Cuba and Venezuela, that are partners of Iran. And Iran would not engage with countries, you know, had the revolution not been successful. I can tell you one thing. Without Iran's Islamic revolution, the region would be very, very, you know, in a far worse condition. The Palestinian cause would have maybe been extinguished already. It would not be the core political issue of our time. Without Iran's support, Syria would not have been able to survive. Lebanon would still be occupied by the Israelis. Yemen would maybe not have been able to survive. And of course, I say this with complete credit to, you know, the Syrian army and the Yemeni resistance and the Lebanese resistance. But I just want to underscore, of course, the important role that Iran played in uplifting them and helping them combat imperialism. It's an absolutely crucial role. And it's not just from a military point of view. It's from a moral point of view and a political point of view.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me on this spotlight. Richard Medhurst, journalist and commentator out of Vienna. Jamal Joachim, professor of international relations, Lebanese University out of Beirut. Thank you for being with us on another spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 62nd verse of the chapter.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. إنما المؤمنون الذين آمنوا بالله ورسوله وإذا كانوا معه على أمر جامع لم يذهبوا حتى يستأذنوه إن الذين يستأذنونك أولئك الذين يؤمنون بالله ورسوله فإذا استأذنوك لبعض شأنهم فأذن لمن شئت منهم واستغفر لهم الله إن الله غفور رحيم.
The believers are only those who believe in Allah and His Messenger. And when they are meeting with Him for a matter of common interest, do not depart until they have asked His permission. Indeed, those who ask your permission, O Muhammad, those are the ones who believe in Allah and His Messenger. So when they ask your permission for something of their affairs, then give permission to whom you will among them, and ask forgiveness for them of Allah. Indeed, Allah is forgiving and merciful.
So, the verse first talks about the importance of asking for permission, not to act without apostles' permission. إِنَّمَا الْمُؤْمِنُونَ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا بِاللَّهِ وَرَسُولِهِ وَإِذَا كَانُوا مَعَهُ عَلَىٰ أَمْرٍ جَامِعٍ لَمْ يَذْهَبُوا حَتَّى يَسْتَأْذِنُوهُ. The verse says, only these are true believers, who believe in Allah and His Messenger, and when they are with Him on a matter that requires collective action, they do not go away till they have asked leave of Him.
Anyway, at the end of the verse, it says, فَإِذَا اسْتَأْذَنُوكَ لِبَعْضِ شَأْنِهِمْ فَأْذَنْ لِمَنْ شِئْتَ مِنْهُمْ. So, Prophet, if they ask you for your leave for some affair of theirs, then give leave to whomever you please of them. وَاسْتَغْفِرْ لَهُمُ اللَّهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ غَفُورٌ رَحِيمٌ. And ask forgiveness of Allah for them. Verily, Allah is forgiving, merciful. Now, the question that we tried to answer in the previous episode is that why is it that the Prophet has to ask for forgiveness of these people? They were the ones who politely came first to ask for permission of the Prophet, and they did not prioritize their own personal matters over the common issues of the community of Muslims. Why is it that the Holy Prophet ﷺ has to ask for forgiveness for them? We said that there are two answers. The first point is that they were allowed to do their jobs, but they gave more priority to their personal and private jobs than Muslims' common jobs. Of course, they asked for permission, but this does not mean that they did not leave the better. They could have stayed there, they could have prioritized the matter of the Prophet and the matter of Muslims' common jobs to their own personal matters. But they came to Prophet and asked for permission to leave. And the Prophet did give them permission. But another possible reason, another possible aspect of the matter is that they did not leave on behalf of themselves without asking for permission. Of course they left the better, but at least they tried to ask for permission and they did this politely. And this means that they, after taking permission, their action is abandonment of what was primary. But they used their politeness towards their leader. They showed their politeness. And the Prophet ﷺ, in return, asks Allah forgiveness as a way of thanking them. And these two answers, as we said, they are not inconsistent with each other.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Of course, dear listeners, there are many important Islamic disciplinary commands, and this important verse narrates one of them. But this is not limited to the Prophet ﷺ and his companions. It is true about all divine leaders, including prophets, including imams and scholars who are their successors, to observe them. Because the issue of Muslims' destiny and Islamic society is under consideration in it. Even in addition to the commandment of the glorious Quran, It is based on reason and logic, because no organization, no group remains without observing this principle, and correct management is impossible without it. And it is really strange that some famous other commentators somehow consider this holy verse as an evidence for exertion, leaving the judgment to religious jurists' opinions. But it must be said that the exertion that is mentioned in the discussions of fundamental dogmas and jurisprudence is about some religious ordinances, and they are not about subjects. No one can reject exertion in subjects, and the opinion of every commander and every chief and every manager in deciding about exclusive issues is respected, of course. But this does not mean that we can use independent reasoning in general ordinances of religion. This does not mean that we can reject or enact an ordinance according to the benefit and interest of ourselves. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me, worry ends when faith begins.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The 45th anniversary of Iran's Islamic Revolution is commemorated in the Iranian embassy in Kabul. The event was attended by officials from Afghanistan's Taliban administration and foreign diplomats from several countries. During the ceremony, Afghanistan's deputy foreign minister congratulated the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution to Iran's special representative and emphasized his country's willingness to broaden ties with Iran.
We must emphasize that the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan wants to broaden ties with neighboring countries, especially the Islamic Republic of Iran. We are committed to deepen our relations with Iran in political, cultural, security, and economic fields. Once again, we congratulate this anniversary and wish to see mutual relations expanding between the two nations.
One of the aspects of the effectiveness of Islamic revolution in Iran lies within our foreign policy. In this regard, our government have made numerous efforts to expand relations with other countries. Accordingly, one of our main concerns has always been to establish peace in Afghanistan. Islamic Republic of Iran, following the emphasis of its leader, has on its agenda to help the people of Afghanistan and strengthen good neighborliness, dialogue, and communication with the Afghanistan's authorities.
People in many countries were inspired by the Islamic Revolution in Iran, and of course the Afghans were affected the most in 1979. The Islamic Revolution in Iran was a series of events that led to the overthrow of the Pahlavi dynasty in 1979. The revolution largely affected many Muslim nations around the globe as it marked a significant shift in the political dynamics of the West Asia. It is believed that Iran's Islamic Revolution in 1979 marked a pivotal moment in its history with far-reaching impacts. The revolution played a key role in shaping the geopolitical landscape of West Asia and continues to do so. Abdullah Mirzada, Kabul.
After a visit to Lebanon, Iranian Foreign Minister Hussein Amir Abdullahian arrived in Damascus, where he met President Bashar al-Assad and discussed bilateral relations. President Assad warned that the U.S. supply of weapons to Israel threatens to expand the war in Gaza. Amir Abdullahian said the aggression against Gaza is considered the main issue at the regional and international levels, noting that Syria is in the front line of supporting the Palestinian people and their cause. Amir Abdullahian also met with his counterpart, Faisal Miqdad. They condemned the U.S. aggression on Syria, Iraq and Yemen, and the repeated Israeli attacks on Syria. They later held a press conference.
I discussed with President al-Assad the latest regional and international developments. The leaders of our two countries are willing to achieve remarkable progress through cooperation in various fields. President Ibrahim Raisi has extended an official invitation to President Assad to visit Iran. We condemn the illegal presence of U.S. forces in Syrian territory.
Our two countries share identical views concerning the support that should be given to the people in the Gaza Strip in light of the genocide perpetrated by the Israeli occupation. Syria has fought wars against the Israeli occupation and remains prepared to engage when necessary. But we decide the timing and approach. The repeated assaults by the Zionist entity on Syrian territories are a direct result of Syrian resistance against this entity.
The Iranian minister concluded by stating that the onslaught on Gaza must come to an end. This visit comes at a critical time to reaffirm the unity of the axis of resistance leadership in response to the escalating aggression by the U.S. and Israel, and to demonstrate the absolute support for the Palestinian people in Gaza. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
The National Day reception in the center of Moscow carried out by the Iranian embassy marked the 45th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. The reception was attended by top Russian dignitaries as well as military figures and members of the civil society.
The anniversary of Iran's 1979 Islamic Revolution is commemorated in Russia every year. As the two countries continue to expand ties, Russian political elite pay their respect to Iran.
Deputy Foreign Minister and Special Representatives of the Russian President for the Middle East and African countries, Mikhail Bogdanov, pointed out on the confidential dialogue between the two countries.
We very much appreciate coordination in the Astana format, where we, together with Iran and Turkey, are the guarantors of, in fact, the cessation of hostilities and the civil war in Syria. Of course, we conduct constant consultations on the other issues on the Middle East agenda. Now the Palestinian problem came to the forefront.
According to Russian Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak, Russia values warm and friendly relations with Iran and hopes for a consistent increase in trade turnover and the expansion of economic cooperation. Of particular importance is the development of the international north-south transport corridor, as well as the speedy completion of the preparation of an agreement on a comprehensive strategic partnership.
Our countries have enormous potential that is inexhaustible. This includes energy, transport, trade, agriculture, geological exploration and construction. Trade, turnover and joint investment projects have significantly increased. The Russian-Iranian Business Council is active and we have almost completely switched to settlements in national currencies. This allows our countries not to depend on those who are trying to hinder the development of our economies. And our Iranian friends also joined the SCO and BRICS.
The guests of the reception all believed in one thing. The stability of Iran's Islamic revolution is due to the unquestioning support of people. Iranians are defending their revolution despite constant propaganda as well as huge funds to overthrow its results.
It is a very important day because Iran strong stand with Palestinian everywhere. You know what happened now in Palestine, in Gaza, especially with the Israeli attack. And we highly appreciate the position of Iran, who is standing with Palestinian people, with Palestinian struggle, with Palestinian rights. And we continue to do that. We hope that the Iranian revolution make a big change in the area. And we are building on this change. And we know very well that Iranian continue to their support for Palestinians everywhere, not only in the Gaza and West Bank, but in the international arena.
Many are seeking to dive deep into the history of the uprising which managed to put an end to years of Western interference in Iran. The Islamic Republic has become a shining example of perseverance in defending its own sovereignty. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
In the early 2000s, only a few countries had the technology to produce unmanned aerial vehicles for military purposes and used them in combat. Some, like the US, enjoyed a near monopoly on this technology back then. Americans boasted about their advanced drones such as the Reaper and Global Hawk that carried a price tag of millions of dollars. However, this monopoly no longer exists, as many countries have managed to develop their own drone programs in recent years to a stage that enables them to produce and even export UAVs. One of the countries that has made great strides in this field is Iran. Following the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979 and the outbreak of the Iran-Iraq War a year after, Tehran understood the need for developing new defensive and deterrent capabilities. And this gave birth to Iran's drone program. While since the very beginning of the Islamic Revolution, Iran has been the target of harsh sanctions, it began producing drones by relying on its domestic potential, particularly the knowledge of the youth. The result, an absolute technological triumph for the Islamic Republic. Now Iran produces drones with the ability to deliver precision-guided missiles in a whopping range of 2,000 kilometers, besides flight endurance of over 24 hours and stealth capabilities. Iranian drones also have a wide diversity and are among the best and most efficient in the world and can perform missions in various fields. The main superiority of Iranian drones compared to foreign models is that they are cheap, have more range and flight endurance, they have stealth capabilities and counter GPS jamming systems. Iranian officials say these reasons have attracted many customers in many countries to buy drones from Iran.
Iran is now self-sufficient in equipping its armed forces with homegrown systems. Since the onset of the Islamic Revolution, maintaining military readiness with a defensive approach for stable security and deterrence has been a definite and practical policy of Iran. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Pakistan has held a parliamentary elections to choose the new prime minister and members of the country's parliament along with four provincial assemblies. The polling, which started at 8 in the morning, continued until 5 in the evening without any break. Over 128 million registered voters across the country cast their ballots for a record 17,816 candidates of both national and provincial assembly seats.
Elections in Pakistan are absolutely crucial, especially during times of economic crisis. As a nation, we are grappling with significant economic challenges, and it's through the electoral process that we have the opportunity to bring about change.
By casting our votes, we can choose leaders who have the vision, capability, and dedication to implement policies that will lead to economic recovery and prosperity.
At least 12 people, including 10 security officials, were killed in separate incidents of violence, while the internet and mobile phone services remained suspended on election day.
Preliminary election results indicate that independent candidates backed by Imran Khan's PTI party managed to secure victory. However, Nawaz Sharif, the former prime minister, is anticipated to be a contender for a fourth term. Three times Pakistan's former prime minister Nawaz Sharif says that he is ready to serve the nation for the fourth time if elected.
We will try our best to overcome the challenges we are facing at the moment. We will provide relief to the masses at their doorsteps as we have promised during our election campaign. My party will also combat inflation.
Nawaz Sharif's political rival, ex-premier Imran Khan, who was overthrown by his opponents through a vote of no confidence in April 2022, is still behind bars for several convictions and is not allowed to run for office against his competitors. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
The ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran in Syria, Dr. Hussein Akbari, held a press conference on Thursday at the Iranian embassy in Damascus for the occasion of the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. He discussed Iran's achievements in the past 45 years and its positions at regional and international levels.
As you know, we're currently commemorating the 45th anniversary of the glorious Islamic Revolution. This revolution emerged victorious under exceptional circumstances and stood against the two main ideologies of that time, imperialism and communism. The revolution presented a new discourse and enabled Iran to break free from Western American hegemony, refusing to submit to any other form of domination. Consequently, a global threat was formed against Iran.
Akbari highlighted the principles of the revolution on Iran's foreign policy to support justice and equality around the world. This put Iran under enormous pressure. Answering journalists' questions, he stressed that Tehran and Damascus share the same principles in supporting resistance against oppression.
The Islamic Revolution has been based on modern foundations and principles since its inception. Its initial slogans were that the Islamic Republic is neither Eastern nor Western. The second slogan focused on the liberation of the Palestinian people from Zionist occupation and the liberation of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The Islamic Republic remained committed to this slogan, despite its high costs. No one stood beside the Islamic Revolution in Iran or supported it except for Syria, who believed that resistance is the right of all people.
The Iranian ambassador affirmed that no matter the pressures, the Islamic Republic will never change its principles and will always support the resistance movements until victory over the occupation. The Arab Writers Union also held a forum that highlighted the achievements and impacts of the Islamic Revolution, not only in Iran, but also at the regional and international levels. The participants talked about how the Islamic Revolution has solidified the culture of resistance as well as fighting for the liberation of all nations. Ibrahim Wahli, Damascus.
It was vindication on all counts. In one of the most closely monitored employment tribunal cases of recent memory, Professor David Miller and his legal team successfully claimed unfair dismissal and discrimination based on his philosophical belief that Zionism is inherently racist, imperialist, and colonial. In a high-profile case, Professor Miller was dismissed by Bristol University in October 2021 after a campaign of relentless harassment by pro-Zionists.
So what it means is that, first of all, I was wrongfully dismissed by the university. They didn't properly investigate the complaints against me, and they didn't properly evaluate what they should do with the results of that investigation. Second of all, the court determined that my anti-Zionist views are protected under law, and it's illegal to discriminate against someone who has anti-Zionist views. And they determined that the university had, contrary to what they said, actually dismissed me because of my anti-Zionist views. So that was the key finding. And of course, that's a protection going forward for every person in the UK in employment who is attacked by their employer or by the Zionist movement, that they cannot be sacked for having anti-Zionist views.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson.
Former parliamentarian Chris Williamson, himself a victim of pro-Zionist hounding, responded to the verdict.
Well, I'm absolutely delighted for David personally, but this is a landmark case and will cause huge ramifications, I think, for other people who have been targeted by the Zionist lobby. And many people have been threatened with their employment. Others have lost employment as a result of their support for the Palestinian people. And so now we've got it established in law that opposition to Zionism is a protected characteristic under the Equalities Act.
A statement from the lawyers representing Professor Miller in this case reads, in part,
"This is a landmark case and marks a pivotal moment in the history of our country for those who believe in upholding the rights of Palestinians. The timing of this judgment will be welcomed by many who at present are facing persecution at their workplaces for speaking out against the Israeli crime."
In the face of the unrelenting genocide taking place in Gaza, pro-Palestinian voices are under increased pressure to remain silent. Professor Miller's victory could make workplaces safer for Palestinian advocates.
The position we were in was I made what are fairly unexceptional anti-Zionist points in my public comments. Now, to Zionist seers, these are unconscionable, outrageous things to say. Zionism is racism, Zionism is colonial, Zionism will always be racist. And the Zionists don't like that, and so they want to show that that is somehow anti-Semitism or some kind of slur on Jewish people. And of course, it's not, but that's what they wanted to show. But what the court has determined is that those unexceptional anti-Zionist statements are, in fact, unexceptional anti-Zionist statements, and that everybody can make those kinds of statements without fear.
Professor Miller's staunch pro-Palestinian views, including his work here on Palestine Declassified, made him a target for the pro-Zionist mob. Now, perhaps his victory at tribunal level will serve as an inspiration for those hoping to raise their voices for Palestine. And how is it Professor Miller's legal team will now be seeking the maximum compensation on offer for the losses and hurt caused by the discrimination suffered. Amina Taylor, London.
In the limelight. According to UN Women, families in Gaza have lost two mothers every hour. Nearly 3,000 women have lost their husbands and become heads of households. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, since the January 26 landmark ruling by the International Court of Justice, ICJ, that the Zionist regime has a plausible genocide case to answer, Washington found a convenient target to divert attention. The United Nations Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA. The Biden administration had already dismissed South Africa's case and the ICJ as meritless before the ruling. It rejected the ICJ's findings as unfounded after. But the administration immediately suspended funding to UNRWA over the Zionist regime's allegations. It admitted it had not investigated that 12 agency employees were involved in the October 7th events. Washington's decision was quickly followed by 17 other countries, mostly America's closest allies. Mainstream media outlets were quick to repeat the Zionist regime's allegations while diminishing the ICJ ruling. Most reports also ignored that the information was likely obtained under torture and that The Zionist regime has killed 154 UN staff members in Gaza to date. UNRWA is the main source for education and health care services, as well as food relief for 1.4 million refugees in Gaza. In response to the Biden administration's announcement, Philip Lazzarini, UNRWA's Commissioner General, explained that lives of people in Gaza depend on UNRWA support. Lazzarini added, as the war continues, needs are deepening and famine looms. Palestinians in Gaza did not need this additional collective punishment. This sustains all of us. Pro-Israel members of the U.S. Congress quickly seized on the allegations to demonize UNRWA and Palestinians. On January 30, the Subcommittee on Oversight and Accountability in the House of Representatives held a hearing in which opponents of UNRWA relentlessly criticized the organization as well as the Palestinian refugee it serves. By the end of the week, competing legislation in the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives proposed to end U.S. funding for the agency. Senators Tim